All right. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this special episode of the Combinate podcast. I'm your host, Subi Sade. On this episode, I was joined by Devin Campbell, who is the founder of Product. In this episode, Devin talks about the surprising journey he took to land in consulting, a place that he never, ever thought that he would get into. He also talks about the role of humility in leadership, how to spot toxicity in cultures, the role it plays in teams, at startups and at large pharma companies. And he also talks about what it's like being the guy that startup teams go to for different areas of expertise. I hope you enjoy this episode with Devin. I really enjoyed talking to him. And with that, if you're not already subscribed to the show, please subscribe on whatever platform you are listening on. Give it 5 stars. And here is Devin.
Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sade. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery. So this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen, and together we can simplify by combinating.
You're somebody whose approach to advice, from my perception, focuses on people first versus product results. At least that's what I've heard you talk about. Yes, the technology is important. Yes, the bottom line is important, but ultimately your impact isn't going to be directly on the product as a consultant. It's going to be by way of a team. And so what got you to that is that accurate? And what got you to that realization?
After my second exit, I took some time. And I had good mentors suggest to me, don't rush. You got people come after you to have you come run whatever. Just say no to everything for a year. And
did you stick to it? Was it like 365 days, or was it like about a year?
It wasn't 365 days. It was about a year. Yeah. And so I just kept saying no to things. Like, not that I was waiting for the right thing to come along, but I know I needed like the universe to present something to me. And so I didn't just jump on the first thing that presents itself. And because I wasn't focused on, and I 100% recognize my privilege in this situation, having gone through an exit, I used the opportunity to then be introduced through VCs and other C-suite folks and that I know that are running other companies, folks that are involved in accelerators. And they'd say, hey, like I just invested, or I just angel invested in this one company. They got a really cool technology that can make a huge difference, but it's like a team of four or a team of seven people, and none of them have ever developed a medical device before. They don't know what they're in for. Could you just help them? Could you like help them understand what they're doing in the lab, how product development works, what does the regulatory landscape look like? What is their life going to look like moving forward? Because I think it's really promising technology, but they need some grounding in fundamentals and reality. So I said, yeah, sure. So I'd go meet some folks, and maybe for a coffee, maybe for a lunch. And if they were really cool people, if they were jerks, then that was it. But if they were really cool people, and it was a really cool product that had the opportunity to impact a lot of people, and I've been lucky enough in my life to have worked on a lot of products that have touched millions upon millions of people in a real and meaningful way. And that sticks with you in the medical device industry. So I would just start helping these teams. And it's fun. And it wasn't about money. It wasn't about bottom line. It wasn't about anything. It was really just helping them think through, and they're sponges. They're eating up all the knowledge and responding and asking good probing questions. And we're having really cool conversations about things, and over lunch and over breakfast or whatever, over dinner. In the lab, kicking the tires of their product a little bit, and then what they're thinking about. And that would just snowball into, they would recommend me to someone else and I would just do it. Yeah, talk to this guy. He's, you know, helpful. About a year of that. And then eventually my wife pointed out, I am having more fun than I've had in 25 years. I'm smiling way more. I'm so much happier than I had been in the past. Startup life is hard, right? And bringing products to market is hard. And having had some success in that and being able to help other people realize that same success and kind of nudge them onto the right journey really makes you feel proud or makes you feel happy. And that's what got me into this space. Like, I had fully rejected the idea of doing any of this. So during that year of not working, of choosing to not jump onto things, I'm thinking, do I want to go back into big pharma? Do I want to go back into big diagnostics? Do I want to do more startups again? What do I want to do next? Never did consulting or advisory work like ever creep into my mind, because I know it's my personal experience. It's not everyone's experience, but in my personal journey, consultants had been used in the past more as a weapon rather than as a force for good. And maybe sometimes you'll bring in a consultant specifically just to reinforce the same thing that you're saying as a senior leader. Well, I brought this consultant in and he or she or they said the exact same thing that I'm saying, so we should move that way. But you cherry pick that person. Sometimes consultants can come in, analyze a quick situation, tell you everything you're doing wrong. You pay them a bunch of money, then they disappear and they have no skin in the game, right? There's no like soul involved in the relationship. And so for me personally, I know that's not the case at all. I work with lots of lovely people who are consultants. But in my personal development in the space, they were usually used as weapons. So for me, there's a little bit of PTSD there. And I was like, okay, I'm never going to do consulting.
Do you think that, because I've experienced both sides, and yeah. I'm wondering, do you think that, like, how much do you think that your own ability to separate the wheat from the chaff from a consultant point of view, like your radar for that is, I'm assuming, much higher with a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. Whereas earlier on in your career, you may get the, I don't want to say snake oil, but you may get the cut and run. Here's a gap assessment by, where do you think, where do you think that contributes?
I think my decades of space developing devices, and not just as an engineer and as a leader of the technical side, but also as an executive, does put me in a position where I can separate that out. But I think a lot of people can't.
I don't mean just that you can separate it out, but also that they won't try to sell you on that. Like, they won't even try. Maybe, and that, no, that becomes it's an auto filter out. You know what I mean?
A self-selection. Yeah.
Self-selection. Sorry.
Yeah, that definitely happens. But that's what got me into the field, right? I really rejected it. I pushed back against it. But to give myself the permission to embrace happiness and embrace joy and really just love what I'm doing, and also know that it amplifies one's ability to make an impact in the world, right? As opposed to like 25 years working on a product at a time, right? One device or one companion diagnostic, at a time, as opposed to being able to help a lot of people bring a whole bunch of really cool products to market, or cool products already on market, help them lean it out or make it more effective or make it more efficient. And whether it's quality systems or product development processes or operations, it doesn't matter. But to be able to help a lot at once, it just motivated me. So I was like, okay, I think this is what I'm going to do. So I started the company, and it's been 6 years this summer.
And what's with the startup folks, what's it like being the guy? Because like I've essentially only worked in large matrix orgs where there's, in some cases, there's defined roles and responsibilities, but in some cases there aren't. And the aren't situations pale in comparison to what you would see in a startup, I imagine. At the same time, there's never a situation where there isn't a significant amount of experience in the organization. And if you're the all-in-one Swiss Army knife. You mentioned regulatory development, fundraising, or raising funds. I don't think fundraising is appropriate for companies, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you're coming in, yeah, and you're supposed to be the person that knows how to get it to market, which includes a bunch of things, instead of being the regulatory quality person or just the engineering person.
From an advisory perspective, you have, I feel, a responsibility to be authentic and to be humble and not overrepresent yourself. So while I understand all of these different impacts, because I've brought so many things to market, and I know, like, we can't do it without thinking about quality. We can't do it without thinking about regulatory impact and how would we do reimbursement and how would distribution happen? Like, all these different things that ultimately affect upstream, how you develop a product to be able to bring that into those markets. When it's a really small startup, you are like the guy, like you said, right? Like the person there that helps them, but you also become the role of facilitator to network them and help them understand, hey, I want you to talk to so-and-so because she's a regulatory expert. She really knows like the digital health space better than I do. You're going to do everyone a disservice if you come in and say, oh yeah, I know everything about, or I know lots of things about digital health, but in reality, you don't know the ins and outs and what regulations just changed last week and things like that. But it's fun to be like in a smaller company. It doesn't have to be like true, really early stage startup, even larger startups or even larger companies that are somewhat established. They still need and benefit from having a sound advisory board or group of advisors around them. And it could be on the product, but I found that a lot of the work that I do is also the interpersonal. It's the first time someone is a COO. It's the first time someone's a CEO or a CTO or whatever. And they might not say it too publicly because a lot of times you have to, like, you know, give this impression of confidence and that what you're doing and like investors invest in that. But in deep inside, you're scared and you need someone safe to talk to. So a lot of times it's not even like advisory work on the product itself, but also here's how you build a team. Here's how you lead other engineers or other scientists. And here's how we think about analyzing data and how would we present that? And just a lot of stuff. It's a fun space to be in.
Yeah. When it comes to the teams themselves, because like I'm thinking mm-hmm. of the five dysfunctions of a team, which I don't know if you've heard. How often have you seen situations like that with startups where you have a toxic person that just becomes almost a dead weight that's holding the entire team, where you just have a situation where it's one person that's a constraint versus like you need to revamp the whole culture of the team? Like, what are the issues that you see when it comes to team building?
When you're an early enough company, you have a very unique opportunity to create the culture, right? And you have the opportunity to course correct the culture very quickly when you need to. And that happens a lot. It is such an intense environment that you will often, of course, there's always going to be some toxicity opportunities. But in my experience with the earlier stage companies and the slightly larger, let's say like small to medium sized companies versus my experience in the big companies that like ones that you and I have worked for, right? Large matrix, huge organizations. It's easy for toxicity to kind of creep in there and a little harder to weed it out. You don't see it nearly as much in the early stage because it weeds itself out more or less. If you're not all pulling, there's so many hats you have to wear. There's so much work you have to do in that space. And it takes a lot of humbleness. If you're arrogant in there, if you're not pulling your weight, you tend to self-select yourself out of that situation because you see that you're just not. And so you don't see a lot of like super toxicity. The problems you have with a lot of startups is more on the, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to use ChatGPT. I'm going to listen to whatever, read some guides. I'm just like, I don't need a regulatory expert. I'm just going to do regulatory on my own. Right. And to think through. That's good that you should take your first stab at it, but you really should have someone who's a professional. Like, you would never do your own IP, right? You can, but you really shouldn't, right? Because you want a really good lawyer, like IP lawyer, to come in and take a good look at what you've done and say, actually, I could design around you pretty easily. We need to build these moats around your intellectual property to be able to better protect it. So you see a lot of folks that just, they're not necessarily arrogant, but they feel like in the startup world, like you feel like you can do it yourself. Like, I don't need to bring those other people and it's too expensive. So I'm just going to do it myself. When in reality, you should do a bunch of it, but then bring on like an advisor. It doesn't have to be complicated. It could be you go out for lunch with someone. You just ask them, hey, can I talk with you over lunch? 9 times out of 10, 19 times out of 100, you're going to get someone say, yeah, sure, I'll have lunch with you. And you get so much great feedback from there. And without having to do any payments or any contracts or anything else.
You've mentioned arrogant a couple of times. And from my faith tradition, we have a saying that not one of you will enter paradise with a mustard seed's worth of arrogance. And the arrogance is actually like the original. We don't believe in original sin, but arrogance is the first sin. No need to get into the details of it, but arrogance is really big in that, not just from a team culture standpoint, but it,
from a life standpoint.
It's important from a life standpoint because arrogance is what will lead you to see something that's not there, but also miss something that is there. It gets in the way of you being able to use your senses and your sensibilities, because it all boils down to ego. But I'm wondering, from an arrogance standpoint, is this something that you feel like you were, the humility, is it something that you cultivated over time? Was it pounded into you from a couple of experience where you thought you were maybe a little bit arrogant and then you were humbled? Like, how did you get to this point at the point you're in your career?
I don't think it was as much about me. There are times I can look back in my career where I knew what I was doing and I knew that I knew what I was doing. But that could come across as arrogant to someone. But I don't feel like I was necessarily ever in a particularly arrogant mode. It's more why I really focus on it in my practice and what I do now and how I choose to live, which is like both work and play, right? Like I mingle it all. There's no work-life balance for me. There's just life. I've seen lots of examples, having developed so many things and worked at enough companies, that you see a lot of examples where that kind of toxic behavior can ruin products, can ruin timelines, can disalienate teams, make people feel underappreciated and just unhappy in what they're doing. And that's not fair. That's not the kind thing to do to them. You don't have to work like that to be able to be successful. You can still be kind and you can be thoughtful and you can care for people and develop good products and do it in a humble way and touch the lives of a lot of people. And in the end, if you do all that stuff, you're still going to make a lot of money. There's still the opportunity there for companies to be successful. You don't have to be pound your fist on the table or I know everything kind of role to be able to get there. So I choose a different path.
Work with product now. What are the things that you like? Is it focused on a specific competency area or is it focused on a specific product type?
Not specific product types. We're still medical devices. Sure. That's our niche. We stay in there. Medical devices in the diagnostic and the therapeutic side of things. And we also work in life science tools, but generally life science tools that may lend themselves to becoming a diagnostic tool later. Maybe their first go-to-market is going to be as an RUO, as a research use only product, but with the idea that then people would use it. Maybe if you sell a research use only device like into a CLIA lab, the CLIA lab could potentially use that as a lab developed test and do some diagnostic work on their own, but like an LDT. But we generally work in that space. And we focus on product development, risk management, operations. We have some manufacturing capabilities that we'll help folks with. And then underlying to all of that is you can't do any one of those things in our space without knowing quality systems really well. But we like to build out when we're touching quality systems, we do it in such a way that it's informed by product development. So it's not just for quality's sake, it's how does that drive my product development processes to be more efficient, to generate better, safer products, things like that, as opposed to just being like, 820 says this, so therefore we do that. That's just blind following, as opposed to what does it really mean? How does it help me do this aspect of product development and really create world-class products?
While still complying. Where?
Complying, yeah.
As we move to close, what is a book that changed your life?
I'll bring up the one that you and I chatted about earlier, since we both have a propensity of putting on some running shoes and running from time to time. Born to Run was a pretty cool book. It's not really a business book, if we were looking like a business book that changed my life kind of thing. But reading Born to Run did motivate me to move away from how I was running before in highly cushioned shoes into eventually moving fully barefoot. Not zero drop, no shoe, just barefoot. And as I got older, I started moving away from that again because I was getting tired of picking sticks out from between my toes. But it's a pretty brilliantly written book. It's got a good storyline to it, but there's a lot of like science and kind of engineering the biomechanics of the body behind it. It's a pretty amazing read. It's hard to read it and not come away somewhat changed.
Awesome. I don't know if I'll go barefoot. We'll see. Where can people find you?
You don't need to. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me through product, product.dev. That's our website. Or they could reach me at devin.campbell. I'm sorry. Devin.campbell is my website. DCC@product.dev is the best way to email me.
Amazing. Great chatting with you, Devin. This was awesome.
Yeah, same.